place is different. Special. The others don't want to talk about it because it scares them. But we all know it. We all feel it. Do you really think all this is an accident? That we, a group of strangers, survived? Many of us with just superficial injuries? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, John?
The island.
Two players, two sides. One is light, one is dark.
I see you in another life, brother. We have to go back!
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and to get out of this horrible spiral of drug addiction I've got into, I'm going to be a homeowner's insurance salesman. Shame if anything happened to this nice couch of yours.
Oh, so you're going to be a petty gangster. My name is Joanna Robinson, and to get out of my crippling addiction-inspired debt, I've decided to sell paper in Slough.
And I'm Neil Miller, and thanks to my crippling debt that I have acquired whilst being addicted to substances, I would be selling televisions. I actually was a television salesman once. I was the only sales thing I've ever been good at. Kinda.
Oh, you mean at Best Buy?
Yes.
Okay.
First, did you throw up on anything?
No, I never threw up. I mean, as far as I remember, I don't know. That period in my life is kind of a haze now. It was a long time ago.
That was not as much confidence as I expected when I asked the question, did you throw up on anything? But good to know. You're listening to a podcast that is rewatching the ABC series Lost that went on for 6 seasons. We're in the first season. This episode of the podcast is about season 1, episode 15 of Lost, Homecoming. It's another Charlie episode. We're going to check in on just how heroin addiction's treating Charlie off the island in the past while on the island. Claire's back! But before we get to all of that, you should know how this show is structured in case this is your first time. We break everything into calm and storm sections. The calm is what we call our quote-unquote no spoilers section, which means we will only be discussing episodes we have watched in our rewatch. That is the first 15 episodes of the first season of Lost. The storm section, which will be after some SpongeBob trap music and a sound cue, is using all of the knowledge of this many seasons of Lost to talk about this episode. And so you could choose what you like, pause, come back later after you've watched more of the series, maybe just break and go all the way into the storm, see what that's like. It's up to you. Choose your flavor. You're in control with this little podcast app. If you want to be even more control of what this show covers, especially in our bonus content, head to patreon.com/stormofspoilers. There's 3 levels there that you could join at. Each has similar perks. Not similar perks. Each has increasingly cooler perks. But at the $1 level, you at least get access to our Slack, which is the best part of the internet. But we do care for all parts of the internet, which is why we like to hear from you in the form of iTunes reviews and emails. Joanna, what do we have this week?
Mm-hmm. You guys have been so nice. We're getting like all these nice 5-star reviews from like Lost fans. It's, you know, the Game of Thrones is slowly seeping out of our reviews at the top here. But so I will do this first review. Red Tigress's mom, 5 stars, an older listener. And we've heard from this listener before, but not on the subject of Lost. And she writes, unlike most of the audience, I was in my 50s when Lost came on, and it was the first time I, quote-unquote, participated in a TV viewing experience. I'd totally a 2004 thing, with a coworker, listened to the transmission podcast, and participated in phone and written comments each week, read Doc Jensen's recaps by the minute they came out, and discussed with coworkers the next day. I'm enjoying going back with Joanna, Neil, and Dave, who are doing a great job of delving into each episode using all the information and perspective we have today. Congrats. So, thank you so much. Yes, IMs are.
I remember AIM. Do you remember your first?
I do. AIM name. Yes. I do. What's your first? What was your first AIM name, Neil?
Okay. So when I got it in middle school. There's a whole story because it's weird. I got it in middle school when I was playing football, and so it's Big Neil 76, which is my football number. So it's really dumb.
Big Neil. No. Dave, what was yours?
Because I didn't, at the into early internet, I thought having things with numbers in it was lame. And then, you know, came full circle and shoved one in my name for internet branding. I had to pick something that nobody else had when I got AIM. So despite being not a super aggressive young teenager, I was Bone Basher.
Oh my God, that's just like a sharp curve. I was wondering if we had this conversation before, because like the Big Neil 76 sounded familiar to me, but I would have remembered Bone Basher, I feel like.
So. I would have remembered Bone Basher as well. This is a shock to me.
Okay. Well, I was the Bone Basher. What was yours, Joanna? You thought you were going to just pivot and go back to the stuff, didn't you?
Mine's so stupid. Unlike Bone Basher, mine's very stupid. I was really into Greek mythology. And my favorite goddess was Demeter at the time. I don't know why. I thought being the goddess of the harvest was pretty cool. But like all variations of Demeter were taken. So I was like, Leetspeak Demeter. Like it was spelled wrong. It was like D-I-H-M and then like a 3. It was bad and like a T and an R. And then like 77 at the end because 7 was my favorite number. So it was like Leetspeak Greek goddess with 2 7s at the end. So good job, me.
How long you had to like, you had to explain everything, and I'd just be like, just find me bonebasher@AOL.com.
We were all super cool, is what we're saying.
Big Neil. All right. all right. And then this I'm going to use this last iTunes review as a sneaky self-promotional thing. So do forgive me. But MGS Designs wrote a 5-star review called Time to Bite the Bullet. This listener, Melissa, says that she's been listening to us cover Game of Thrones for years. Basically started watching all the shows that I cover for Still Watching, I think, which is why she watched Big Little Lies and Sharp Objects, et cetera, et cetera. She follows us all on Twitter and Facebook, et cetera. And then she said, I recently saw a post by Kristen Russo asking for name suggestions for a podcast about my so-called life and contributed my suggestion, which turned out to be an actual podcast that already exists, my so-called podcast. I recently binge listened to the whole, and though it was enjoyable to relive the episodes after a rewatch a few years ago, I was hoping for more analysis of the characters and thematic discussion rather than just a rehash. When Joanna just announced she'd be doing the rewatch podcast with Kristen, it was like my dreams coming true. I'm so, so excited for this rewatch and podcast. My so-called life was the show of my adolescence. I was 12 when it aired. I identified so well with Angela Jace. I've decided I've been listening to you all and enjoying your podcast long enough. It's time to finally pony up and become a Patreon member. So I've just signed up. Thank you again. Whatever you all want to talk about in the future, I'll be there for it, Melissa. So thank you so much, Melissa. The My So-called Life podcast I'm doing with Kristen Russo is called The Boiler Room. Boiler Room Cast. You can go to boilerroomcast.com. We've got a Kickstarter that's chugging along there with some cool perks. You can like watch along the episodes with us and stuff like that. So that's going to actually start going at the end of this month. But boilerroomcast.com has all the info you might want about that. And then what else do I say in my section? I talk about where to, like, leave us a review if you want. You can also email us, hosts@stormpodcast.com. We've got a website, stormpodcast.com. Or you can find us on Twitter, @stormpodcast, where we've got fun polls that we do every week and stuff like that. And so the last thing that I'm going to say before I hand the mic back over is to read a quick email that has, like, a nice, fun prompt from one of our listeners. Mike emailed us, hosts@stormpodcast.com. And Mike is a huge Lindelof fan and wrote us a very long email about how much she loves Damon Lindelof, how much he loves Lost, how much she loves The Leftovers. And then here's the very pertinent bit, which is, so now comes The Watchmen, which I believe you guys will also cover. And I have some questions for you. I know absolutely nothing about the Watchmen comics or the movie. To be honest, when I first heard Watchmen was Damon's next project, I was a bit disappointed because I'm not into the superhero genre or comics at all. I also didn't want Damon to get hamstrung by source material again. That was a leftover season one reference. So my question is, will the Watchmen allow Damon to do what he does best? Will he be able to shock us with mystery and plot twist still? Will he be able to create intriguing characters a la John Locke or Kevin Garvey? Adapting or remixing The Watchmen has me concerned that Damon is doing a more straightforward story without much mystery or plot twist. Is my assumption correct, or am I off base? Basically, is Damon capable of pulling off a wheelchair reveal or a bleep moment in The Watchmen? I hope so, because he's great at it. Thanks for any feedback. You can just respond on your next pod or here, whatever you like. All right. So I, you know, I have my thoughts about this, but I thought I'd open up to you guys. Like, Neil, do you have any thoughts about what to tell Mike, to expect from, The Watchmen as a property?
I mean, I think that Damon Lindelof is perfectly capable of crafting some surprises out of all that source material. In fact, his ability to do so is sort of where the whole thing hinges. Maybe. Also with the character work, which, you know, there's some good character stuff in Watchmen. So yeah, I don't know. I'm going to watch it. I think that's pretty good endorsement right there.
Dave?
I think that not only will there be like smaller surprises along the way, I'm looking for season one to have like a big gut punch behind it. Because Watchmen, the comic, you know, sorry to spoil it for you, but we don't exactly win that comic. And it looks like, from the teasers for the series, the sequel series, we even lost that first comic more than we thought we did. So I'm interested to see. Yes, I think there's a twist, but I wouldn't.
Can you say that again? Okay. We lost that comic? What do you mean by that? Sorry, I don't understand.
So our heroes were not necessarily worthy. Giant space squid had to be teleported and thousands of people died in order to unite the human race. None of the the question of who watches the Watchmen was basically like, no one's responsible enough, you know, give or take some more complicated readings. And now it looks like Rorschach's diary, which has the actual versions of events, which would disillusion everybody, has since leaked out since the end of that comic book. That might have been too specific, but maybe as exactly as specific as, you know, this person wants. But yeah, I think there's going to be a big twist in the first season, or at least that's what I'm hoping for, if not episode by episode.
Yeah, something I would tell Mike is that, having both read the comics, seen the Zack Snyder film, which has some great bits and some not great bits, what Lindelof is doing, the remix that he's doing, he's essentially doing a sequel. Like this takes place, I think it's whatever, 20, 30 years after the original, whatever makes me feel less old. And so you have some characters who were written in the original comic are in these, played by older actors like Jeremy Irons or Gene Smart. And I think what he means by remix rather than sequel is like, first of all, Alan Moore, who, did the Watchmen comics, like famously hates all adaptations of his work. And so, I think Lindelof is trying to tenderly, like, sort of separate himself from Alan Moore's work, because I think he knows Alan Moore would want it that way, right? So he's saying, okay, the original comics is sacred. I'm not adapting them. I'm not changing anything that happens to them. That is a sacred text. I am trying to extrapolate what would happen in this world 30 years later with our current concerns, seen through the eyes. So like he's not bound by any source material in terms of the plot of the timeline he's working with. He's only bound by like what happened in the past. And I don't think that that is stopping him. The episode that I saw the first episode, was extremely experimental. And, I thought it was very cool. And so like, if you thought he was going to like go like milquetoast vanilla superhero comic, like A, that's not what Watchmen is, a comic, and B, that's not at all what he's doing. So it's weird, it's wonderful, it's wild, and like the character stuff, as far as I know, this season of Watchmen is going to be like Lost and Leftovers have character centric episodes, so center on various different characters. This is like Lindelof's preferred method of telling stories, so I think there is going to be a lot for Lost and Leftovers fans in this, and I hope that answers all your questions. All right.
Well, I'm definitely going to watch it now.
Yeah, it's good. And yeah, and we're probably going to, we are definitely podcasting about it. We just haven't figured out yet whether or not those are going to go in the main feed or be available to our Patreon subscribers only. We are still figuring that out. We have until October to do so. That's it for me. I did it. I did all the things.
All right. Well, let's let the guys talk. Hey, Neil, did I ever tell you about the time in college that my hair started falling out?
No, Dave. This has been already a podcast full of interesting revelations about you. And,
yeah, the hairless bone basher is something that nobody wanted part of their life.
Oh, yeah, you're telling me somebody who went by bone basher eventually lost his hair?
Yeah, yeah. It was just too much testosterone squirting out of my head pores. But it turns out that science can actually stop this cascading process of losing all your hair. Because, you know, once hair falls out, it's not like you're growing those hair follicles back. So you need to make sure to catch hair loss before it happens. By the time you, like, notice that it's happening, you already need to do something about it. And this is a normal problem because, like, 66% of men lose their hair by, like, age 35, which is now my age. And I'm convinced that if not for science, I'm a man of science after all. If not for science, I could be bald today. Is there some sort of solution that we could offer to our listeners that could also save them from a John Locke future of just like sweat beads constantly cascading down your face at the worst opportune moments?
Well, Dave, I'm glad you asked because there is. And it's called Hims. And it's at 4hims.com. It's a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, sexual wellness for people like you and I who are men. Anyway, Hims uses well-known generic equivalents to name brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. There's no snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements. Who would buy that at a gas station? Prescription solutions backed by science. So if you're a man of science, this appears to be for you. It's also very easy. You can answer a few quick questions. The doctor will review and prescribe you what you need. And here's the thing, Dave. Our listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See the website for full details and safety information. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Just go to 4hims.com/storm. That's forhims.com/storm. 4hims.com/storm.
4hims, everybody. And we're back. Joanna's back. Neil and I never went anywhere. Neil, can you catch us up with what happened these couple of days on the island?
I would love to. Anyway, as we mentioned, this episode is called Homecoming. It was directed by Kevin Hooks and written by Damon Lindelof himself. It aired on February 9th, 2005, and it takes place days 27 through 29 on the island. Let's give a little recap in flashback. Charlie cons a young woman named Lucy Heatherton into a relationship in order to steal from her to pay for drugs. Because you see, Charlie, he had a drug problem for a long time.
What?
Yeah.
First I'm hearing.
Crazy, I know. He then takes a job from her dad, which is a weird twist, and somehow still decides to steal from her. And then he pukes on what can only be called a city copy machine. That's what happened to Charlie. On the island, Claire's back and she doesn't remember anything. Luckily, Charlie saves/read her diary, and it's not like the entire camp would actively conspire to withhold information from her, right? They wouldn't keep her in the dock. Or maybe they would. Ethan, who's back also, threatens to kill one person each day with his big Mapother energy unless Claire is returned to him. Elsewhere, good news, Vincent is back. Bad news, Steve is brutally murdered. I'm sorry. Scott is brutally murdered, and he was a good guy.
Ohio.
This is another Tour to Jack episode. Jack and Locke argue about strategy. Jack and Kate argue about guns. Jack and Charlie argue about Claire. Jack literally fights Ethan again, and then Charlie shoots Ethan a bunch of times with a gun that Jack dropped because instead of shooting Ethan, Jack decides to tackle him while holding a gun in one hand. Because Jack, brilliant. It all ends with the revelation that Charlie killed Ethan because he's got a real complex about taking care of someone. Also, Claire remembers peanut butter. Got a few fun facts for you guys this week. First fun fact, in a show full of non-Australians doing bad Australian accents, it's worth noting that they cast an Australian accent, an Australian actress, Sally Strecker, to play Lucy, who is a British character.
Oh, this is one of my quizzes that I was going to do for you.
Oh. It was, okay. I mean, her accent, it's bad in reverse. Less fun fact, Damon Lindelof told the USA Today in 2009 that this was his least favorite episode of the series, which I'm sure we will come back to as a thing to discuss. However, I have a question. What do you think Shannon was thinking when she decided to just spill all the beans for poor Claire? Let's start with Joanna. What's Shannon's play here?
I feel like Shannon said, I am not wearing this purple halter top and dangling earrings just for everyone to pay more attention to another girl in this camp. I don't know.
Dave, is there any survivor level strategy to Shannon giving Claire the info?
No, I think it's more like relief because Shannon wanted to tell her like second one. Like when someone told Shannon, she's like, we're not telling Claire. She's like, that's dumb. So when Claire came up to her and there's like a flash in her eyes, she's like, ooh, I get to be the one to do this. And I think she loved it.
Yeah.
Give Shannon something to do.
Yeah.
That's one thing this episode successfully does, I guess.
She also gives Saeed like a dainty sponge bath later. I don't know if you caught that.
Yeah.
Oh no, I missed that.
It's a great pietà like posing yes. of like some absolutely useless dabbing of a sponge.
It's true. It's true. All right. So something that I was going to spring on you guys is that I have a series of quizzes, just a few short quizzes, to liven up this episode because I agree with Damon Lindelof. I think this is one of the worst episodes of Lost ever. I also, silver lining, think it's the last bad episode of season one. And then it's all
that's
gold
a take.
From here. So.
Okay.
I don't think that's a controversial take. Do you think it is?
No, it's just not a take I had considered yet. And I think you might be right.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, well, I mean, let's really quickly do the accent quiz, which is, are these actors actually British? So we already know the answer of Sally Strecker, who plays Lucy. She's Australian. What do you think of, Jim Piddock, who plays Francis Heatherton, her father? Is that actor actually British?
Actually British or actually Australian?
Actually, he's supposed to be British in the show.
So he's
supposed
to be British.
No.
I think he is.
He is. He's from Kent. And not only that, but I know him best as one half of the announcement duo in Best in Show. With Fred Willard. Yeah. So he's the stuffy British one. And then Darren Richardson, who plays Tommy. Darren Richardson, who plays Tommy, who's Charlie's dirtbag friend, who calls Lucy a moose. Very rude. Tommy, Darren Richardson is a thriving voiceover actor. He's been in a million gajillion films that you've seen, his voice only. Is Darren Richardson, thriving voiceover actor, actually British?
I think Joanna is trying to lead us away from the correct answer, so I'm going to say yes.
I'm going to say no, because I didn't buy it from this guy.
This is a trick question because according to VoiceOver Wikipedia, which there is like a VoiceOver wiki, they call him an American actor. But then this is how deep I went into research for this, guys. I tried to find like footage of him talking to see if I could figure out like where he's from. I went to his YouTube page and he has like a drama reel and a comedy reel and I watched both of them.
And you're still not sure?
He's British and everything, so I think he's British. I mean, maybe he just, like, does a British accent, like, passably well or whatever, but, like, maybe he's the Cary Elwes of voiceover actors. But anyway, I think he's British. If you have any intel on Darren Richardson.
He's either British or it's the first time that Lost's casting department has gotten someone who can do an accent that's not their natural accent correctly.
Anyway, that is the accent quiz. There will be a few more quizzes before we are done here. I should also say, we haven't said yet, but our guest this week on the podcast is the great David Sims, co-host of the Blank Check podcast, writer over at The Atlantic. And Sims, if you didn't know, was born in London. So he has some thoughts on how Lost treated the UK.
If I had a Winston Churchill cigarette holder, I would not display it out in my where any old junkie could just pick it up off the table.
You sound like you're from London. Yeah. So we will hear from him. But first, I guess let's talk about this really shitty episode of Lost.
Sure. While we're back at the flashback thing, when you are watching an episode of television that you know is bad, as, you know, occasionally happens when you're rewatching episodes of television, you try to find, like, anything that could hold your interest. And so this time, in rewatching the flashbacks, just tried to figure out exactly at what point both Lucy and her father realized, like, what they were really dealing with Charlie, and then just sort of, like, hoped he would actually live up to the shit he was talking. Because, you know, heroin addiction isn't subtle as portrayed by Lost. When the father is talking to Charlie at the table, and it's obvious, you know, that Driveshaft isn't coming back, the scene's sort of shot like, you know, Charlie's admission is supposed to be sad. I'm still not sure whether or not at that point the dad knows what he's dealing with. Neil or Joanna, did you guys feel that Charlie's shtick wasn't holding up, or did it hold all the way to the end and I should just believe the television series that, you know, maybe they were true innocents?
Go ahead.
My read on this is that he knew Charlie. I think he knew Charlie wasn't, like, maybe an addict or, you know, something like he knew Charlie was maybe not to be trusted, but he also knew that he was important to Lucy. And so he, like, gave him the job, not because he was like, oh, bona fide rock star, I know, I'll give him a job in my company. He was like, you know, for Lucy, I'll do this. This kid might be bad news, but he's not so much bad news that I have to warn Lucy off of him.
My daughter off of him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Neil?
Yeah. No, I pretty much agree with that.
All right.
That was, yeah.
And then,
although Lucy, I did, here's one question that I had in this whole interaction, which is, I actually was constantly trying to figure out when Charlie decided that this was actually a bad idea, because I think that doesn't happen until she's like, I'll drive you to your first day of work, and he was like, oh shit, what have I done?
Right.
I think that Charlie probably was ready to bail. Like, if he would have gotten on a bus, he would never have made it to work.
When she's like, I'll drive you, and then she walks out the door, and, like, we focus on him to do the end of flashback sound. I was watching with Java. She's like, just drop it on the floor. And you're like, you could have at that point, and just walked out. It's been like, whoops, I knocked your Winston Churchill. Maybe you shouldn't keep that on a low table where it could be knocked off like that.
Ugh. He really wanted those drugs.
He really wanted those drugs, but he did want, I mean, like, I don't want to defend Charlie because this is like, it's not even the worst Charlie episode. It is.
It's a pretty dark Charlie episode.
It's not the worst Charlie flashback, I will say, but it's, I think, the worst Charlie episode because, like, the on island stuff is not even redeeming it. But I think he does, like, when he accepts the job, like, that's the whole thing, right? She's like, why do you accept the job, Charlie? He wanted to be a better man. You know what I mean? Like, in that, like, I think there was a part of him. And then Tommy, like, threatens him, not to put it all on Tommy. Charlie's making his own choices. But Tommy's like, oh yeah, cool story, photocopy salesman. I'm still gonna need that money, though. So you're still gonna need to steal that cigarette case. But Charlie actually did, like, memorize his sales pitch. Like, he did.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I don't know. If I'm Lucy and I see him, like, sweating through his suit,
yeah,
I know what's up. Like, she can't be that dumb. Poor Lucy.
I don't know. No. They kind of play her. I mean, this is just my reading on it, but they kind of the way they sort of write her and play her is it sort of hits her all at the end. Like he really does pull one over on her.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think the dad maybe is a little wise to it, but you know, Charlie's a fairly good liar when he wants drugs.
I mean, maybe it's just also her ignorance of what drug addicts do and look like, but as far as television storytelling goes, she definitely should have known earlier.
Yeah.
They were like dating. Presumably he spent more time with her than just the times we saw on screen, and he wasn't holding it together that well the times we saw on screen, so I doubt, you know, she's... Anyway.
It's really a commentary on the arrogance and privilege of the upper class.
That's right. They don't even know what drug addiction looks like.
How dare you?
Yeah. Okay. All right. So I was going to jump back to the island unless we have more stuff here. Okay, good. We don't. Charlie needs to care for somebody, and he ends up committing a murder on the island. Does that track? Like, does this flashback paired with this island story make any sense to anybody?
It's like, are you capable of caring for someone? Here's the deal. It's like, Charlie ages so poorly as a character type. Like, this episode ends with him, like, Claire trusting him? Like, what? I don't understand the lesson of this episode.
Hey, thanks for shooting that guy for me.
Yeah. I mean, he does everything wrong, or like, or in a creepy way, because, like, again, he gets away with reading the diary.
Yeah.
And everyone's just like, yeah, thank you for all of this.
You know, oh, I get it. What happens on the island stays on the island. I mean, I don't know. I just like, I guess I get the point. It's just sort of like, he is like, Lucy's dad has this like really heavy handed speech at the dinner table about why he gave up his music career, because when you're a man, you need to take care of your family and of your women. And that's what a man does, puts away childish things and becomes a man. And so that's like Charlie blaming himself for not taking enough care of Claire in the first place. And then like feeling like he's stepping up and being a man, shooting Ethan in order to take care of her at the end of it all. Ugh, I hate it.
Yeah, it positions a lot of our characters in ways that where they're also acting slightly out of character. The one thing that, you know, hit me more on this rewatch than in other ones is that they just, like, basically give Sawyer a gun. Like, yeah, I know you missed that killing that guy that first time, but har, 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 har. And, like, that was, like, super traumatizing for Jack, but two episodes ago in the hidden graveyard instead of the actual graveyard, which we get this episode. So it just also seems odd. I think at some point Kate also tells Saeed she doesn't know much about guns, but now... The solution is like Sawyer has a magic gun that we all forgot about apparently, and he gets to pass it off. It's all very sloppy for a conclusion that ends up being our main characters wrestling in the rain and the mud with Ethan, which I feel like could have happened at any time for any reason, given his absolutely scary coming out of the ocean and murdering a dude.
I can't believe what I'm really bummed about. And you'll hear me say this again when I talk to Sims, but like what I'm really bummed about is that we don't see get a like Apocalypse Now shot of Ethan coming out of the water with like hopefully a knife in his teeth or something like that. Like, and
you
now
need, like Commando Ethan.
Yeah. Now it's time for another quiz, which is this.
Excellent.
If you were to get one spinoff from this episode, and there might be like a spoilery sort of answer to one of these, but if you don't react, then our listeners won't know. Okay. If you were to get a spinoff of this episode, would you prefer the adventures of what Vincent's been up to? I think this was Caroline Framke's suggestion when she was on the episode. She really wanted an episode that was just from Vincent's point of view, that was very like Pizza the Dog from the Hawkeye comic. So, so a Good Boy Vincent spinoff. What was Vincent up to in the jungle? Scott and Steve, the first 30 days. Like, what were those guys doing for the first 30 days? What's their story? Or Ethan Rome, what's that guy's deal? which of those three would you prefer, from this episode? Pizza, Good Boy Vincent, Scott and Steve, the first 30 days, or Ethan Rome, what's that guy's deal? Neil?
I'm going with Good Boy Vincent. As much as I probably would watch the Ethan one, Scott and Steve don't interest me that much, other than Sawyer can't get their name right. Yeah, I'm going with the dog, because you could use like one of those like cameras, like attach it to his collar, and it's just like POV style. Yeah. It'd be great.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the Ethan Rom, what's up with that guy, because that seems like it would actually have, you know, story I would want to watch. I mean, I'm sure Vincent looking and peeing on absolutely everything is compelling television, but I feel like
it could have been kind of fun, like in an almost like The Office sort of way. If like Vincent's just like spying on everyone, you know, like Vincent's just like, he Vincent's up to like the tree line, and we see people's conversations.
And Vincent just makes Jim Halpert faces the whole time.
Like, you know, those shots in The Office when they're like through blinds or whatever, you know what I mean? Anyway, okay, Ethan Rom was that guy. I mean, like, here's the deal. Ethan, what did he do to poor Scott? He, like, broke his neck.
Broke all a bunch of his bones and shit.
His arms and, like, every bone in both of his hands, I think. That's so extra, Ethan.
Yeah, it remains to be seen if Ethan is the bad guy, but he is definitely a bad guy.
Yes.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
No, I will just mostly give... this is not a question. I was just going to give this to Dave, which is this. There's this moment where... Saeed's like, we need men along the tree line, blah, blah, blah. And Boone's like, I want to help. And Saeed's like, whatever, dude. And Locke's like, yeah, bud, we're counting on you. And Boone looks like he was just given, like, the most delicious bone. Like, just, like, he's the goodest dog in the whole world. So I just want to give this to Dave, that is a very, like, cult leader moment of John Locke, where he's just like...
Well, only that, but then Boone fucks it up, because Boone's useless. Like, it made such an emphasis about it. Like, we're going to give you a chance, buddy. And he's like, oh boy, here's my chance. And then, like, immediately falls asleep. It's like, take a nap. You take a nap before you take night watch. It seems like at least Boone would have learned that by now.
Yeah, I definitely would have thought that.
Yeah. So this further proves our point that Saeed is always right about everyone. He looks at Boone, he's like, you're going to fall asleep, you little motherfucker. Like, I know it. It's not Boone's fault. Like, he wasn't on the shore, though. It wasn't his fault that Scott died. Right? They're like,
we don't know that.
They're unrelated.
Like, they're like, he came from the ocean, and Boone's like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Because we don't know. We just assume he came from the ocean. He could have just walked right past Boone. Anyway, that was all part, apparently, of another, like, Ethan... getting into the camp the first time, you'll notice he has like some red scratches across his cheek. There's apparently a scene where there were some like perimeter defenses and he like fought Locke or something like
that.
And that's why he's limping.
Locke stabbed him in the leg. We were deprived of that fight. But I always thought he got those scratches on his face from Claire.
Oh, maybe. Since they never released the scene, we don't actually know.
But he got the limp from Locke, but I always imagine that he got the scratches from Claire. Not that she can remember. Something that our listeners asked for is like, more Diana hot takes. If you're just tuning in, Diana is my roommate who has never seen Lost. It's hard for me to like give you guys hot takes at this point because, Diana watched this episode so long ago, but I do remember what she said, which is like, Claire comes stumbling out of the jungle. Diana, can't remember if I said this last week, but Diana was like, if she is fucking amnesia, I swear to God. Like, yeah. Is like, I don't remember. Do you think the amnesia is a good like narrative device, not a good one, but it's a convenient narrative device in that it can like they can stretch out you know, if they don't know what happened to Claire yet in the writer's room, they can like have more time to figure that out or whatever it is. But it's also something that we haven't talked about in a little while, which is that like helpful network TV recap time, right? Claire's like, who are you people? Jack's like, well, we were all on a plane together and we crashed here. We've been here a month. But my baby's... No, your baby's fine. Oh, but why hasn't anyone come to rescue us? Well, and then they just sort of like... They need to say, well, according to the pilot, we were off course. They didn't say that. But like, you know what I mean? They did that like, if you weren't watching the first half of the season of Lost, this is what happened sort of thing. No? All right.
Yeah.
No,
if you're just catching up on a random Saturday night during Sweeps Week.
if last week was your first week on the island and you're like, what's up with the polar bear and the psychic kids? This week really, you know, brought you back to the earth. Yeah. But just Ethan just like turning a guy's arm into jelly and murdering him on the beach. Fun show. Fun show, Lost. Heroin addiction and Winston Churchill cigarette cases. That's in my notes, but it's one of Joanna's most 2004 things, which I don't think we're quite there yet. We have our, like, one of the first Lossies team up against an external force moments, which, I, as you might know, whether or not you've been listening to a lot of the Storm, some of my favorite Lost moments are, like, the teams and the plans. This one is not super well executed, but I do like that it exists. And I do like that as the show goes on, I don't think this is a spoiler, they get better at sometimes at justifying the geography of what's happening. I can't say for sure that Jack isn't going to do something dumb like dive at somebody with a gun in his hand, but, things like this episode where it seems like they're all in view of Claire and then all of a sudden it takes everybody 2 minutes of Jack fighting Ethan hand to hand for everybody to show up. I think that probably.
Yeah, like where the hell did they go?
Exactly. Like, they were all supposed to be in visual sight of each other. Why are they all up in the trees if they all have to jump down out of the trees?
It's a hall of mirrors in the middle of the jungle.
Those trees move, bud. Yeah, I don't know that I agree that Jack jumping on Ethan with a gun in his hand is a stupid move because like they're trying so hard not to kill him, right? So.
Right.
I mean, he could shoot him in the knee or whatever, but like, I feel like Jack's like, do no harm sort of thing. Like, right. Jumping.
And it is like Jack is like, I'm going to take him this time.
Yeah.
Jack! Just a leaping punch and right on brand.
All right. Who wants to have a Sawyer line read off with me?
Oh, man.
You want to do it?
Sure.
All right. I've put it into the notes. I've highlighted it. It's in our show notes.
I like this.
Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I'll go first, yeah. Okay. Jungle Boy. Not even for 1 second.
Jungle Boy. Not even for 1 second. Dave, you want to play?
No, but Neil won.
Fair, I'll take it.
All right.
And that has been... Sawyer line reading off. That's a really good, basically anytime Sawyer says jungle, cause like, I'm tied to a tree in a jungle of mystery is still one of my favorite lines from the series. So yeah, get any excuse for Sawyer to say
cause it's the jungle. Most out of place thing yeah. is the guy from Tennessee
saying jungle.
Jungle of mystery.
All right. I have one more quiz before we get to the most 2004 thing. Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It is. A hunk of the week question. And like, unfortunately, our true hunk expert, Jenny Owens Young, isn't here. Also, this is an all male, competition this week, but, next week we will have some lady hunkitude to talk about. So we can talk about that next week. But, you know, equal opportunity hunkitude is my, motto. But this week it is two gents from the island squaring off. It is Wet Saeed in a tank top versus shirtless Jin. Neil, who wins the hunk off this week?
I mean, Jin's pretty ripped. So as much as Shannon and I are big fans of Saeed, I'm going with Jin.
All right. Shirtless Jin, what do you say?
And his jungle battle wounds.
I'm also going with Jin because he does not have to look at Shannon uselessly sponging him off. Like, it's interesting. And that... The hunkiest thing is not falling for whatever.
The person
Shannon's
uselessly
doing.
Sponging him off of his wife.
No, there's spoons. So it's this like montage at the end where it's like, everyone has someone except Charlie. And it's like, Sun and Jin are like spooning on the ground near the fire. And Shannon is sponging off Saeed. And Charlie's just like, why don't I get the girl? And all of us in 2019 are like, cause your character sucks. But then he does kind of get.
Why are you guys coupling so quickly? It's only been like 28 days. Oh.
Yeah. All right. Are we ready for the most 2004 thing?
I've been ready.
Yes.
I've been ready. All right. So we've got a couple options here. When this first cropped up, I was like, surely this is not. But I looked up the timing and I think it is. When Charlie says Annyeong to Jin and Jin says Annyeong back, which is hello in Korean, right? That bit had already happened on Arrested Development, the character of Annyeong. So I choose to believe that that is an Arrested Development reference. That happened in March 2004, is I think when Annyeong first appeared.
It's definitely a thing that 2004 people would be like, ha, I know what that is.
Yeah, exactly. So Annyeong, the part where Lucy says her father's buying a paper company in Slough, which is a reference to the original British Office, which takes place in a paper company in Slough. Charlie makes a Jane Austen reference, which, like, Jane Austen is timeless, obviously, but there was a real moment in late 1990s, early aughts when, like, there were just all these Jane Austen adaptations. So I'm putting Jane Austen in there. I almost put Shannon's funeral look of the halter top and the dangling earrings in there, but I try to leave Shannon's clothing out as much as possible. So my fourth entry here is the character of Charlie Pace himself that he has seen as any kind of hero. So is it Annyeong, the Arrested Development reference, buying a paper company in Slough, the Office reference, a Jane Austen reference, or the character of Charlie Pace? Neil, what's the most 2004 thing about this episode?
Annyeong.
Great. Dave?
I was gonna vote Annyeong, but now if I do that, it sounds like, and then in 2004, America learned one Korean word. So I'm going to go with The Office because I think it's one of those 2004 things. It's not only the most 2004 thing, but if you didn't have context going in, you would be like, that's nothing. That's just a line for flavor. It's a stealth 2004 thing.
I think it's true about, like, both of them. Like, because Annyeong, I mean, yeah, it's just a...
One is debatable, and if ABC's making a Arrested Development reference, I think.
When did The Office premiere on NBC? I mean, I know we're talking about the British Office, but March 2005 is when The Office debuted on NBC. So, a month after this. Interesting.
Oh, so it would have been just for the Brits. Most British 2000 thing.
unlike Lucy, who's Australian.
Right. Unlike the Australian British actress, who they could have used to play an Australian character at some point.
But no. They wasted her.
We need to make her British.
All right. That's all my, like, I don't know. Do we have any other spoiler-free... I almost want to, like, a fun, this is not like a quiz I'm going to make you guys take, obviously, because you know the answer, and I'm not going to make our listeners, I can't make our listeners do it, but maybe a fun thing if you're watching Lost for the first time and you haven't, like, peeked ahead, try to figure out by watching the episode whose episode is next week.
A little tougher this week. This one's probably one of the harder ones if you don't know what it is.
Sometimes they really lead, and I don't think they did this time. But let's check in with Joanna from the past and our friend David Sims.
We are beyond thrilled to be joined by Atlantic staff writer, Blank Check podcast host David Sims. Hello, David. How are you?
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for joining me to discuss the episode of Lost that Damon Lindelof calls the worst episode of Lost.
He does?
Yep, he thinks this is the worst one. So,
and he knows about Stranger in a Strange Land.
So, I know. Like,
right.
I was reading an interview and he said, you know, fans say it's Stranger in a Strange Land, which is a later episode. Don't worry about it, guys.
Yeah.
He's like, I say it's Homecoming.
He might be right.
And he wrote this
Stranger
episode.
Stranger in a Strange Land is sort of not to say anything about it, but it's sort of an irrelevant episode. This is kind of a lot of stuff happens in this episode.
Yeah. He calls
which kind of makes it worse.
Yeah.
Right.
He calls it a failure on, like, every level of what a Lost episode can be. So let's talk about it. You're also not a fan of Charlie Pace, our central character, in this episode. And I have to tell you, like, let's just open the door on this because, here's my memory. My memory is Charlie was a beloved character when Lost was originally on. My experience, both watching it myself now in 2019 and hearing from a bunch of people who are watching it for the first time with us, is that Charlie maybe suffers the most out of any character with this like 15-year gap between when the show premiered and now. His character type is not one that we are inclined so much to root for anymore.
So
give me your Charlie thoughts.
I have a lot of Charlie thoughts.
Yeah.
I do remember. So I watched Lost, you know, when it was on, as I assume you did too. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming, but yes. Okay. And, you know, at the time, he's one of the, you know, big characters. Like, I feel like he was one of the four leads. Like, ABC was like, our leads are Jack and Kate and Charlie and like maybe Sawyer or Locke, you know. Right. And, you know, he's all over the pilot, and obviously he's the guy from Lord of the Rings, which is a year early, you know. So I think everyone's going into the first season of Lost being like, oh yeah, we're going to build so much around this guy.
Yeah.
And then here's my take, which may be an extremely boring take, but so you have his first episode, The Moth, which I think is very cheesy and like, you know, isn't amazing or anything, but it does like tell a story and kind of resolves Charlie's arc. He gets over the heroin. And unlike most Lost characters, that's it.
They are now
done with Charlie.
Yep.
His arc is fully resolved. And now they're like, so what's Charlie's deal on the island? I guess he's like likes Claire and kind of makes jokes. And then maybe occasionally, you know, we'll sort of think about heroin. Like, it's just they don't, you know, everyone else, they're sort of like, yeah, great. We're going to build on this. And we have a lot of a big arc sketched out for a character, both in flashback and on island. And in Charlie, they resolve both the flashback and the island arcs in the fifth episode of the show. And now it's like, what are we going to do?
Yeah. And they're like, oh no, they're like, it's Dominic Monaghan. He's from Lord of the Rings. We can't like not use him, but we fucked up. Yeah. I think that's true. And I think they've admitted that too, that just sort of like, they're like, okay, there was one story we figured out how to tell with Charlie. And then we wound up kind of telling it over and over again.
They either tell it again which you're like, ugh, or they don't tell it. And you're like, well, this is pointless.
Yeah.
And it's such a solid hook. Like, oh, he's a heroin addict. He doesn't have any access to the drugs anymore. Like, what's he going to do? And then like, you know, Locke helps him get over it. And that's that.
Did you
and
know
now he's a little moth?
Did you know the trivia that the character of Boone originally was supposed to be like have some sort of psychiatric disorder and run out of his meds on the island? They had like a few like run out of their meds on the island, like, and then instead we get like Shannon doesn't have her inhaler or whatever. So you know,
right.
But yeah,
I don't know that. I mean, that makes sense because Boone is also somewhere where you're like, what was their concept plan for this guy apart from that he's pretty?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like he's a rich kid.
No, I think that I think there are a few, characters that were just like failures in these
sort
early
of immediate
seasons.
Debt.
Yeah. And you're just sort of like, and they're like, oh, and maybe they learned, you know, your mileage may vary later, but maybe they learned later, like, okay, if we're going to add a new character, let's have like several things we want to explore in their backstory. You know what I mean? Or keep them all minor because you already have our core, however many people or whatever it might be. But yeah, with Charlie, I completely agree with you. It's just like a failure. But also, I think something that has not aged well in Lost, and I love Lost and I'm loving this rewatch, but I think something that's not aged well is the particular possessiveness that like most of the men on this island have towards their like female.
Their lady.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
And the Charlie Claire stuff feels the most egregious because Claire, compared to Kate, Claire is just like a little, no offense to her, a little bit more helpless. And so it just feels
underwritten.
Yeah, definitely. And so it just feels a little more damsel-y and just bad form, you know?
In the first season, she's just pregnant. Like, that's what she is. You're just like, when's she going to have the baby? You know, she's just Emily DeRaven. I actually have no idea how you pronounce her last name.
I like how Frenchy you made it, though. DeRaven.
You know, she's incredibly charming, and I like the sort of hints we have of Claire as just this kind of like hippy dippy fun person.
Right.
But that's again, like, you've created a character who's kind of fun, but we're on an island with polar bears and stuff. Like, you're going to need more of a reason to sort of hang out. And so, yeah, Claire doesn't have a ton to do. And Charlie keeps being like, well, I'm going to protect Claire. It's like, this is a collective situation. We can all protect the pregnant lady. Like, we can watch out for the pregnant lady. We'll keep an eye. It's okay. But, and Charlie's whole, like, well, no, it's my responsibility thing is a little, like you're saying, a little creepy.
Yeah. And it bothers, what bothers me is, like, it's okay if it's seen as creepy. And there are ways in which this episode sort of interrogates that. Like, Claire's like, why are you lying to me? Why are you lying to me, Charlie? Like, all this sort of stuff, right?
My baby.
My baby. But, he gets like a happy, ending, right? Where she's like, oh, I remember peanut butter. Like,
I remember that peanut butter.
And it's just sort of like, okay, like, like, he shot a guy that they needed to keep alive. He fucked up, like, end to end in this episode, and he gets a happy ending anyway because.
Yeah,
Dom is cute.
Right, at the end, he's like, I wouldn't let that animal live. And it's like, no. We're not just going to let that be the end of the discussion, are we? Like,
right, exactly.
And also, I mean, it's also just wild when Jack's handing out the guns and Charlie's like, I want one. And Jack's like, have you used one before? No. Jack's like, well, you know what? You're the only one here, so I guess you can take it. Like, you know, maybe one more canvas. Hey, anyone ever went to a firing range?
Does he give one to Charlie? I thought Charlie picks up one that, like, someone drops.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Charlie steals it. You're right.
But, like, I mean, we could talk about Jack and guns because, like, I was rewatching this episode this morning and, like, he hands the gun to Sawyer.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
another wild thing to do.
Not to Kate. And then, and then Sawyer does his, like, weird thing that, like, makes us love him more and more, where he's like, let the little lady have a gun, you know? And it's just sort of I mean, Sawyer, you're a creep in your own right, and we have, you're a problematic fave, but, like, the way in which he doesn't, oh no, I love Sawyer, but the way in which he, like, doesn't let anyone put Kate in a corner, you know what I mean? Like, he's got this weird, like, feminism or equality thing going with her, where he's just like, she's super capable. Let's use her. You know what I mean?
She is super capable. I do feel like Sawyer is at least 50% just like, if I can score a hit on Jack when it comes to Kate on any count.
True.
Like, I'm going to score. I'm going to take the shot. Like, you know, if there's any point at which Jack is being a little paternalistic or a little, you know, patronizing, like, I'm going to get right in there and be like, you know what? Kate should have all the guns.
I got this gun right here. Bye, guns. All right. So, let me ask a question. Of all the castaways that we've met so far on the island, up to this episode, do you have a personal favorite? If Charlie is not a deeply, like, I could almost feel you heave a digital sigh as you type to me, fine, I'll do this Charlie episode for you, Joanna.
Charlie.
Do you have a favorite?
Locke, at this point, Locke is certainly my favorite. When I first watched the show, characters like I love Sawyer. I feel like Sawyer comes into his own more and more as the show goes on. You know, right now he's still mostly in his kind of just like, I'm a cocky guy mode. But Locke was like, in 2004, I was like, I don't think I've ever seen a character like this in a television show. This is a very strange person. Like, the from the pilot, when he puts the orange in his mouth and smiles, and I'm like, what's this guy supposed to be?
What's this story?
I get the archetypes at work here, you know, largely, right? I get what's going on with Jack and Sawyer and Charlie. Who is this guy? And then, you know, so I think at this point, like, Locke, I mean, Sun is obviously this very sympathetic figure, especially in the sort of first half of season one. Like, Jin remains kind of inscrutable. Things, you know, who are like some of my favorites. I've always had a soft spot for Saeed. He's sort of one of my like all time faves. Those arms. Really? Have you talked to him often? Have you talked about his arms? Like, have we had arms?
Yeah,
talk?
we had Jenny Owen Youngs. I don't know if you are familiar with her work, but she is a great connoisseur of hunks. So she was just like, Saeed.
He's a top hunk.
Maybe number one hunk on the island is Saeed. This is a classic.
He's the hunkiest. That's for sure. Right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, others might, maybe you have more of a crush on Sawyer or whoever, but like,
sure.
I think Saeed is the objective hunk.
I mean, the endless tank tops. And in this episode, we get like a sopping wet tank top. So it's just like even better. Just classic.
It is also just fun in these early episodes where they're like, someone needs to build a trap. Hey, Saeed, hey, you know, like that's when he gets gets brought in, you know. Sure. He should be 100% on every leadership committee conversation.
That's what's so frustrating is, like, sometimes it's just, like, Jack and Locke deciding. I'm like, except Saeed's the most capable.
He's in the military, guys.
Like, call the Red Beret, I'm just saying. Yeah, absolutely. No, Saeed's hunkiness in this episode is maybe only rivaled by Jin, who gets a, I believe, a shirtless moment.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Jin very hunky too. Yes. Oh yeah, he's a well built guy.
Also, you know, top just, hunk. Right. Absolutely, yes. Absolutely. Yeah. He just usually hides that gun show, whereas Saeed is like every day is.
Saeed's feeling.
He knows exactly.
Who wrote this episode? Lindelof wrote this episode. Well, he fucked up. I don't know what to tell you. Jesus.
I'm
sorry, can I swear? I just swore.
Oh yeah, please swear. Okay. Homecoming deserves it. My question for you is, are you a fan of like what Lindelof has done after Lost?
I'm a Lindelof super fan.
Yeah.
I interviewed him a couple years ago for, I guess, the Leftovers finale.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's one of those guys who only gives you an hour. Like, he won't do a short interview. He demands an hour.
No.
Which is delightful. And it was one of those things where, like, I just, like, immediately sat him down and I was like, I'm sorry, I want to talk to you about Prometheus. I want to talk to you about God. Like, you know, I'm noticing all these, like, links between all your work. Can we talk about this? And he seemed, like, you know, perfectly charmed by me, but I was obviously, like, trying to sort of project, like, Damon, I'm not messing around. I like the bad stuff. I like the stuff you did that people don't like.
For me, when I also interviewed him for the Leftovers finale, and I was just like, I never wanted someone to think I was smart as much as I wanted Damon Lindelof to think I was smart. I was like, oh, I have thoughts on religion and like how we all feel about it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, obviously, right. The Leftovers finale is also one of his headier things. So sure. you want to come to the table.
Yeah.
But I love Lindelof. I do think that he, even if he's taken a big swing and missing or whatever, which he's done, and I'm sure he would admit to doing, like, is just someone who, you know, won't make boring stuff, won't make boring TV or movies. He was very frank. I mean, I'm a like huge Prometheus defender. I was sort of like upfront about that and stuff like that. And he, you know, he's pretty frank about like, you know, there's times when I was doing too much stuff and like, I feel like the work suffered, right? Like I spread too, right? But you know, Lost was very special to me. My first year in college, it got me through some rough stuff. Like I've like shown, you know, I've like rewatched it with every woman I've ever loved. You know, like things like Lost matters to me. I love Lost.
Do you actually rewatch it with the woman you love, or do you watch her while she watches to make sure that she appreciates it as much as you do?
No, neither of them appreciate it as much as I. That was a lost cause. I was more like, don't worry, we're gonna get through it. But Homecoming is one of those episodes where you're like, if on the rewatch, you're like, oh yeah, we're just gonna have to like power through this one. This is not gonna be like the most compelling flashback.
I was feeling bad about our listeners who are listening week to week and have never seen it before. And have to do this week. Yeah. And I was looking at the rest of the episodes in this season. I was like, oh, I think they're all huge winners from here. So like
100%. This is the last bad one.
This is the last bad one. And then it gets like so good.
It does.
But to circle back to
this is maybe the only terrible episode of the first season at all. I'm just sort of like,
The Shannon Boone episode, not a classic.
And you guys, I guess, there's the middle
this
is a
rough
sad.
Patch. Yeah, this is
right.
A rough
the kind
patch.
Of like return to Jack and Kate, Shannon Boone, Michael, Charlie episode 2 run. Like, I don't hate the Michael episode. Like, there's, you know, there's some good stuff in there.
Yeah.
But that is definitely where maybe if I'm watching it for the first time, I'm like, do they have any idea where they're going with this?
Right. Or like maybe 23 episode seasons were always a terrible idea or whatever.
Oh, that's true.
You know, yeah. No, but to circle back to Damon, like the reason I asked you is if you were a fellow Lindaloon or whatever we want to call ourselves is like, what, like, you know, in as much of a spoiler free way as you can say, like what themes do you see in Lost echoed through some of his other stuff that we've seen?
Well, he's made a lot of stuff about asking unknowable questions about the world, right? Lost is about that. I don't want to spoil too much about where it's going, obviously, but like, it's this mystery wrapped in an enigma, and like, it's this magical place that, you know, every answer you get, you know, comes with five more questions, and it's tied. I mean, again, I don't want to spoil too much, so maybe we can like talk a little more about this once
in
we're
spoiler, sure.
Spoiler section.
Yeah.
You know, what I love about Prometheus, if I can just defend
Prometheus. Yes! Let's make this a Prometheus defense.
I do want to talk about Charlie, too, just for a second. Okay. I mean, we'll get into Charlie.
Okay.
Into a stupid flashback. is, like, Prometheus is, at its heart, about all these people who think they've found our creators, our, you know, gods or whoever, and they're all going to ask a different question. Some of them just want to know, like, why are we here? Why did you make us? Guy Pearce is like, can you make me live forever? You know, we've all got different ideas. And we meet God, and he just picks us up and squishes our head and throws us against a wall. Like, that's the sort of grand foolishness of trying to answer life's biggest questions. And then The Leftovers is about that, too. It's like, just like Lost. It's like, well, you know, the mystery is as exciting as the answer. Right. Like, you know, like, and with The Leftovers, he'd figured out to let the audience know, like, I'm not going to give you the answer. Just like, you know, do not come into this thinking I'm going to tie this all up. But there's something driving The Leftovers, just, you know, the same thing that's driving Lost.
Yeah, I love that. All right. We'll talk more about
we
that.
We can talk a little more
in the spoiler section. Okay. And before we get back to Charlie and his stupid flashback and Winston Churchill's cigarette holder or whatever,
forgot about that. It's just, they're so bad on England. I feel like they're better on other countries, you know, like on Australia.
Are they?
Or even maybe not.
We've had,
you know,
some complaints. Here are two major complaints we've had from Australian listeners. Number one, Claire goes, I must be the only Australian who loves peanut butter. And so this like sparked this whole conversation where we were like, oh, I guess Australians don't like peanut butter. That's true of some countries. Okay. And then
it's kind of true of England, honestly.
Yeah. And then we had a bunch of Australians write in. Like, someone sent us a photo from an Australian supermarket with like all the peanut butter options. And they're like, we love peanut butter here. What the fuck? And then last week we were reading out Claire's journal. She has her like packing list, and sure, one of the things on her packing list, other than like, I have to return this DVD to Blockbuster, is she packs jerky. Someone wrote in and was like, on the other hand, we Australians do not eat jerky. And I was
that's
like, that's
interesting.
Fascinating. Plus poor Australia, like, there are so many, I don't know, Hawaiian actors or whoever they are who had to like do terrible Australian accents, in various episodes of Lost. So, yeah.
All right, fine. Maybe it's bad on Australia. And then its concept of Korea is mostly like hotels, I guess.
It's
like
every
city in Korea just is in a hotel, right?
It's this like 2-block stretch of Hawaii, Oahu. There's like a Chinatown, and they're like,
I know they're bound by that. Like, I know they're bound by the fact that they're shooting in Hawaii, and it is kind of incredible, you know, the many ways that they used Hawaii.
Yeah.
But
this like one bridge in Hawaii where they're like, does this look like Korea from this angle? Does it look like Korea from this angle? Okay. But tell me about how they're bad on England. This is the other thing. If people are listening to this and maybe they don't know, you grew up in London.
In the UK.
In the UK. So you got your bona fide. So why
grew up in Manchester.
No.
Charlie. No, there's nothing really wrong with it. It's fine. It's just like, there are things like that, like a guy has a Winston Churchill cigarette case where I'm like, could you have not just Googled for a second to think of someone that's not Winston Churchill? And I get that they're like, look, this is an American TV show.
Right.
We're gonna search for a very profound and obvious.
Wait, what would have been your fancy artifact?
I don't know. Just like Harold Macmillan or something. Like, it just feels like the whole, you know, concept of England is like, yeah, it's like William Shakespeare, and then I don't know, it was chill for a while, and then like Queen Elizabeth, and then Winston Churchill, like, you know, like there's like five famous English people.
Yeah.
But
there's the Spice Girls, so we know about them. Yeah.
And Oasis, and Charlie, of course, is like, seems, you know, he's very obviously supposed to be like Noel Gallagher. He's like the
What like, makes you say that? Just because he has a brother named Liam?
Because he has a brother named Liam, and also he's supposed to be like the songwriter in the group who was not the front man, right? Like he was like kind of off to the side.
Yeah.
But as any English person would know, like Noel Gallagher is famous forever and will be rich forever. I mean, obviously Oasis didn't crash and burn like Drive Shaft, but if you were a celebrity in England, you can just go on reality shows and open supermarkets, like, you know,
be on Drive panel Shaft, shows. Yeah.
he'd be doing fine. I guess his crippling heroin addiction is an issue. It, like that's kind of doing him in. But like, what's this plan he's cooked up? Where it's like he's like catfishing ladies to steal. Like, what is the plan? They're just gonna rob the house. No British rock star ever like catfished a lady and robbed her house to make money. They just like signed an endorsement deal with freaking, you know, the Rainforest Cafe or whatever, right? Like that. That's how he would be making money.
Love it, love it. I love that you have so many solutions for Charlie. You're like, it doesn't have to be this way, bud. You don't have to like torment poor Lucy and vomit all over a photocopy machine.
Lucy. Who plays Lucy?
I don't know. Some very lovely young lady.
She's cute.
Yeah, she's so cute. And she's supposed to be like this like rich.
Yeah, they're mean to her.
Yeah.
They are not nice. No. I know the idea is that they are not in a nice place in their life, but it's like, she's giving Lucy a break.
Yeah, Sally Strecker. Lovely.
All right.
She, of course, she's Australian. Her accent was a little dodgy.
Yeah, she doesn't, and she doesn't talk a ton.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're just like, let's just, it just feels
slapdash, right? Like, just sort of like.
So slapdash.
Yeah.
The scene with the copier is like lame, like where he barfs on the copier.
Yeah. Yes.
Is, you know, and like, we're in between two scenes on the island of high stakes chasing and gun handing out and stuff, and like we're cutting to this copier scene where there's like an acoustic like doo, 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 you know, going over like Charlie fucking up a sales pitch.
It just
sucked.
I have an unfair question to spring on you. Who do you think is the best at transitioning into a flashback? Because I think Dominic is one of the worst because he does like this middle distance stare.
Oh, you mean like like, okay, now Dominic, there's gonna be a whooshing sound playing over this, so Jack is an extremely Matthew Fox is a very good starer in general. Jack always looks about to cry or scream anyway, so if you're just holding on him, you're like, well, this has to be important. I'm trying to think, and Jin has a very good like kind of middle distance, like his Gino is also just always kind of brooding, especially in the first season.
Absolutely,
he's good. Yeah, I they're good. Charlie is bad.
Yeah, Charlie's bad.
Like Monahan, a good actor. I don't know. He's okay.
He's fun. Right?
He's fun. He's kind of charming and fun.
Like he might just be Mary, and that's okay.
Right?
You know what
right.
I mean? I don't. Yeah, I haven't watched his like reality. Doesn't he have like an animal based reality show that he does now, like a nature show or something like
Wild
that?
Wild Things with Dominic Monaghan.
Yeah, there you go.
Kind of shit you get to do when you're a famous person from England. It's like, I don't know. We'll just send you to Tasmania and you'll walk around.
Right, and just be Mary all the time. I mean, like that's the thing is like he's great as Mary, and he's even better in the commentary for the Lord of the Rings like DVDs.
Yes,
like, fantastic.
He is, right.
So like, yeah, just do that and leave the island alone. I would say my vote for best at going into a flashback is Josh Holloway as Sawyer, because Sawyer's flashbacks are usually like a little like soft shell crab moment. You know what I mean? Like you're about to like learn something very vulnerable about him. So like you hold on his face and he's angry about something, but you're about to find out something really sad and vulnerable. And yeah. That's the Sawyer.
It is funny, right, how often the Sawyer flashback is just like, turned out he was just sad.
He was just a sad boy.
He's just a puppy dog.
He's just a sad, sad boy.
He tried to do a con, but actually what really happened was he fell in love with a nice lady and then he felt bad. Whatever. Like, you know, I mean, I'm not even spoiling anything. I'm like, that's seven Sawyer episodes.
Sad, sad boy. The other thing that I wanted to ask you about is you mentioned Locke as like your favorite because he's so complicated. Oh, yeah. An ongoing discussion that we have, usually in the spoiler section, but I feel like it's okay to bring it into the non-spoiler section, is like, is Locke at any given moment, we cannot decide, a hero or a villain? I say he's never a villain, but like hero or antagonist, you know what I mean? Like,
I do know what you mean.
Yeah,
in season one he's sort of like a, you know, quasi hero in that he works with the group and, you know, he can get stuff done, he can track, he can hunt, but you just always feel like, you know, from basically from the pilot, from him putting the orange in his mouth, you're like, oh, this guy has like a whole other, like, you know, viewpoint on what's going on. And thus his goals are probably different. I don't want to get too spoilery. But yeah, he's, I don't know. You think he's not a hero right now? Hero is a strong word.
Well, let's just remember that he very recently put some like drug laced goop on Boone and made him hallucinate in the jungle. And
I know.
The thing that I love that he does in this episode is they're like assigning out like people to stand guard. And Boone goes, I want to help. And so it's like, okay. And then Locke's like, no, pal. We're counting on you. And it's like, Boone a cookie. And Boone's like, yes, master. Thank you.
His relationship with Boone is intense.
He's just he's brought him right to heel. He's like, this is my little puppy. I've drugged him. Now he's mine. So,
but then there are some episodes like The Moth where he is like a purely good figure. He's just like, he's helpful and he's supportive. Again, I do feel like I love the first season of Lost. I think it's kind of a perfect object, like just the first season. Like, I like where the show goes. It goes in all these crazy directions, but let's say it had just gotten canceled after the first season. That kind of would have been like just a wonderful thing to look back on and look at this crazy ambitious thing they did. But at this point in the show, you do still feel like, yeah, they figured out like four things and there's so much, like we're still in the caves kind of like, you know, there's still like, half bogged down in the Lord of the Flies, like how do we run a society on the island? And this episode, pretty much this episode is one of those early Lost episodes where you're like, why is nobody just sitting down and being like, hey, there's another man on the island?
Yeah. No,
he didn't just live over there. There must be all sorts of stuff going on. Let's all get up right now and walk inland until we find him, like, or wherever he came from. This is insane. We can't just like sit in the caves and have feelings about, you know, the adventures we used to have.
Yeah, no, Claire goes missing for like, they're like, okay, we've been here a week. Claire was missing for 2 weeks. So Claire's missing for fully half the time they were there. And I, you know, like, Locke and Boone lied that they were like looking for her, but like no one was looking for her.
No.
Charlie was just sad and no one was trying to find her. Let's talk about my friend, Ethan Rome.
Yeah, baby. Love Ethan Rome. One of my favorite characters. I vastly prefer him to Charlie. If this episode ended with him shooting Charlie, I'd be like, well, you know, you win some.
Why don't we, if this had been an Ethan Rome flashback, I've been really excited about it. Just when you think like Ethan couldn't get any scarier.
He's so scary.
He comes up from the water.
You know, with the scratches on his face.
You strung up all these like adorable traps. You put your best, most tank toppy men on the beach line, and I came up out of the water. Surprise, motherfuckers.
And then Charlie gets to shoot him because, in cold blood, basically in cold blood and like unarmed. Like, I don't know if Lindelof's complaint about this episode goes all the way to like, maybe we should have kept Ethan Rome in our back pocket for longer. Like, maybe it was a bad idea to, have him die this fast. But that to me does seem like, you know, you kind of
introduced
a really compelling person here.
Looked at the dailies from his first episode, seen like how big his neck was, how much he looked like Tom Cruise left in the oven too long, and we want Tom Cruise's cousin here longer, right. You know?
That's the thing. That's what we have to talk about. Okay. So William Mpother is a talented actor. He's good in the bedroom. He's good in plenty of things, right? I like William Mpother, but it is partly just the more you look at him, the more you're like, yeah, he kind of does look like a long Tom Cruise. So like that just makes him scarier. That is it. The end of Solitary. What's the episode that ends with him just standing there? You know, as Hurley's like, he's not on the manifest. You know, the whole like,
And he's like looming over because Charlie and Claire are little midgets, and he's long Tom Cruise. Yeah,
I think I think it's Solitary. Yeah. Whichever, you know, and it just, I remember at the time, like, you know. Getting on fucking MSN Messenger or whatever the hell I used at the time and like chatting my friends and being like, that was kind of chilling. Like that was like sort of Twin Peaks almost level, genuinely unsettling. And then in this, as you're saying, like he's just as unsettling. And then he gets defeated by Charlie, who kicked Skag a week ago and has never fired a gun. And he did it because he's horny for Claire. Like, and it's such a non-sexual relationship. Like, right. You know, partly because she's like 9.5 months pregnant. But like there's no real like sort of frisson there. It's not like Jack and Kate and Sawyer where you're like, these are hot people. I want to see them kiss. Like they're, you know, they're a bunch of hotties. Like they just seem like chums. Like it's just not like a very fun, you know, dynamic.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you. And like, maybe if it had been Sawyer who gets off that great line, I think he goes like, you know, not one inch Junker Boy or like whatever he says to Ethan. Right. Like maybe Sawyer, I would have been okay with it. But Charlie and like all the bullets he wasted doing it too. It was just like, didn't he fire like, I don't know, 20 times in a row?
Yeah, that's the other thing. Right. There's just, no, you can't get more bullets.
Yeah.
Come on, Charlie. Whatever.
Yeah. Charlie, not a fan.
How does it end? I guess it just ends with the peanut butter.
Yeah. One last question.
Yeah, sure.
In the non-spoiler section before I will let you unloose your Lindelof feelings. Do you think if you were stuck on this island that you, like Shannon, would choose to wear a halter, like a fancy halter around the island? Or what would be your style choice?
That's a great question. What would I wear on an island? Mm-hmm. Are there linen shirts? Like, I would be so into linen.
Yeah.
I would be very much like, I need to shield my skin. I'm going to be in the sun like 18 hours a day, right?
Right.
But, like, I need something that breathes. I would, like, root through the, like, corpses and the, whatever, the fuselage being right. Like, did anyone pack for, like,
you a know, light linen?
A beach vacation? Yeah.
Yeah.
And just not worry about wrinkles.
Right. Just be rumpled and sweaty, but, like.
Jack has some linens, right?
Yeah, I want to say there's a character. I'll mention a character later who has linens, I think.
Oh, sure. And also cargo. I do think it would be crucial. Pockets just feels crucial. There's nowhere to put anything on the island. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're walking from the beach to the caves.
You don't know what you're
hang out with your friends at the caves. Right. And you're like, Jesus, why do you guys live here? Underlip.
So you're a fan of Kate's cargo bootcut khaki things that have,
you know, I would be very insecure about, like, I need to keep an eye on everything that I own.
Oh, sure, because who knows what Sawyer might steal. So keep it all in your person. Excellent. All right, well, is there any other spoiler-free thing you want to mention about Lost in general or this episode?
I love Lost. It's great. I'm just, are you having fun?
I'm having so much fun. Yes. And what's really fun, so like my roommate is watching, she's in season 3. Sure. But she's watching for the first time. And I was upstairs last night and she's watching an episode and I heard half of one line and I was like, oh, are you watching? And I named the episode title and she's like, yeah. And I was like, before we started this project, I would not have called myself like an expert on Lost by any means, but I was like, I feel like I'm getting there. I'm like studying. I can identify an episode by sound, by half a line. Like, we're getting there.
I was such a dork about it. It was just something where I was like, yeah, I'm going to be all in on this. Like, I'm going to, whatever. Like, I'm gonna read Lostpedia every day. And
were you on Lindsay Romaine was telling us she was on the message board.
I wasn't much of a message board person. Message boards. I had my message board. I was on an Oscars message board. Anyone who is deeply invested in the mythos of my teenage years would know that. So that was. But there was plenty of Lost discussion there. Obviously, there was Lost discussion everywhere. But I was pretty up to date on any, you know, radical theory that was being floated or any bit of like Easter egg hunting that had, like, you know, been like, if you look in the corner of this frame, like,
yeah,
there's a picture of a thing. What does it mean? You know, all that stuff.
That stuff really ramps up in later seasons. And like,
and the first podcast I ever listened to was the Lost podcast, which I don't think exists anymore. Like, I don't know how to find that.
Yeah, you can.
But
find
I listen. Can you? I listened to it on my iPod. It's like I remember every week, like faithfully plugging my iPod in to download the new Lost podcast. And it was so candid because, you know, it was like such early days. And I think Lindelof and Cuse were just like, you know, whatever. Like, no one's listening to this shit, right? And right. So they would be really funny. And like, that was great. I would love to re-listen to those poor maniacs.
Yeah. Before they got like, you know.
Yeah. Before they were like, I never want to interact with fans again.
Exactly. Yeah, well, I guess that's something else I can ask you in sort of a spoiler-free way, because we've talked about this freely on the podcast, which is that, you know, the ending of Lost is sort of famously controversial, divisive.
Sure.
And one of the reasons we decided to, like, hop on it right at the tail end of Game of Thrones is because we were going through a similar thing in the culture. Yes. At the end of Game of Thrones. Yes. You know, what has been your experience? Well, first of all, did you enjoy the end of Lost? And if you did or didn't, like, what are your thoughts about the Lost ending now, this many years later?
My feeling on finales in general is, look, you're either going to do the Lost finale, the Battlestar Galactica finale, the Sopranos finale. You're going to do this thing that's sort of, like, remembered for how maddening and strange and interesting it was. You know, like, you know, it's remembered as this kind of, like, crazy finale, like the Seinfeld finale, right? Like, you're going to do that, or you'll do the Wire finale, which is, like, look, it's not radical TV. They told you what happened to everyone. You know, like, you know, they just kind of tried to, like, you know, focus, like, they laid it all out for you, which is kind of what the Game of Thrones finale was, and everyone lost their damn minds. I had complicated feelings about that thing too, but I don't know. I don't even know where you fell on the Game of Thrones finale, Joanna.
Oh, I think Game of Thrones had already hurt me so much.
Right. I was kind of there too.
I was sort of emotionally checked out. So, like, they couldn't really hurt me in the finale, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And, like, also, I mean, with the Game of Thrones finale, I was kind of like, I'm such a book fan that I was like, I can see a good version of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Like, you know, I don't think they know what they're doing, but with it, like, I can see them being sat down and being told this sort of general ending.
And right, they're told
how it could be worked towards in a better way.
Right, they're told King Bran, and they just sort of, like, fumbled their way there. And George, and we know it will be better because he's taken, like, a damn decade or whatever to write it. You know what I mean? Like,
100%.
At least. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I like the last couple seasons of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Were,
yeah,
like, diminishing.
They're still.
Yeah. So, you know, I was just sort of like, okay, I'm here for the highs, which to me was, episode 2, right? Night of the Seven Kingdoms, Bran, sure, Jamie, sure, all sure, that sure, stuff. Sure. Like, right. Here for the highs. Can't get too fussed about the lows.
The last season of Game of Thrones is what I would have written. If George R. R. Martin sat me down and was like, here's what's going to happen. And I'd be like, okay. I have how many episodes? Okay. I have that many episodes. All right. I guess I'll give it a shot. Like, it's pretty basic. I don't know. Whatever. We don't have to talk about Game
David,
of Thrones.
David, why didn't we do a Game of Thrones
I'm
podcast?
Sorry.
I could have done a Game of Thrones podcast with three different Davids. I really should have aimed for that in the final season.
Yeah. Well.
Okay. That is it for our spoiler-free discussion with the lovely David Sims. If you want to hear the spoilers that he and I talked about, you can subscribe to our Patreon at the $10 level and get that as bonus content this week. If you want to hear the spoiler conversation with Dave and Neil for free, you can just stay tuned. All right, now is the time on the show where we like to thank our Small Council Patreon members. These are folks who subscribe at the $10 or above level. We got to watch the film Empire Records with them last week. Great folks. Thank you all for joining us. We want to thank a brand new member, Laura Atu. And then we also want to thank Benjamin Jacoby, Hope Shock, Reginator Cakes, Elise Abschitz, Gustavo Villarreal, DJ Empirical, Aubrey Iyer, Phil, Jackie, Jessica Lair, Sir Sigfusson. I feel like I've done that one better in the past. Manu Mishra, Megan McLeod, David Koplos, Eve Fontelet, Ryan Silverstein, Lily Lim, Derek Dock, Vince Louie, and Russell Griffin. Thank you guys so much.
And I would like to add a list of people to our bountiful thanks. I would like to thank Philip Durrett, Melanie Rodriguez, Sarah Carmichael, Wade McFarland, Spencer Howard, Huang Lee, Michael Sample, Camilla Urbina, Richard Teverson, Megan McKenna, Lindsay Giuliano, Jenna Mandel, Chris Ernst, Rosa Peretta, Elaine Salmon, Samantha Finnegan, Ashish Shereed Haran, Sam Luna, Kayla Sargent, and Annie AK.
Hey guys, guess what? I have a list of people I would also like to thank.
What?
Crazy. This list includes Stephanie Breitbach, Becky McMorrow, Jack Gunn, Matt Campbell, Bronwyn Beck, Emma Bride, Rebecca Castle, Aaron, Jillian Q. Johnson-Arnold, Jeremy M. Johnson, Whatever It Is 12, Joe Torrens Fernandez, Miriam Erickson, Paul, it's just Paul, Asiya Glover, that's close, Brian Hopkins, Keys, Kelly Idson, Tay, and Chase. Those last two were two different people, so, you know.
Back to talk about Storm Thoughts about Homecoming, which I'm not exactly sure what we should talk about here.
We need
to start off with okay.
I mean prompts. Enough of me talking, but I do have some prompts. We can start with
antagonist Locke. Check-in.
Yeah.
I don't think it's Locke. I think it's Ethan this episode, obviously.
Oh, is that what the new segment is? It's not like is Locke the antagonist, it's who's the antagonist in this episode?
Well, that's what we settled on because I wanted to use villain and antagonist was too soft. And then we got into some sort of like tussling conversation about how Lost isn't always the antagonist. So, I mean, in this one, I'd be willing to give it more to Ethan just because, I mean, Locke is only an antagonist in the sense that he thinks he knows what's best about, ways to secure the beach and sort of browbeats people into it. But I don't think that's enough to necessarily label him a villain.
He also finds out where Jack's hiding the guns.
I don't think so. That's at all. True. I think that Locke is genuinely trying to help protect the tribe in this episode. I also like his thing where Jack's like, we don't need to tell everyone everything. And he's like, we do, which neither of them subscribe to that, sort of consistently throughout the series. But it is a thing that always bothers me of like the quote unquote leaders of the group deciding who gets to know what when, you know, like,
yeah. It bothers you like it bothers Shannon.
Shannon's like,
and not even quite as much as it bothers Claire.
When I'm already in the dark, why'd you keep me in the dark, Charlie?
You know what? It's funny because when the actress who plays Lucy says Charlie, she says it that same way. And I'm like, I know it. You're not British. You're Australian.
I will say, as I've watched this episode now, like three times within the past, like, I don't know, month and a half or whatever, all in the name of this podcast. And every time Claire goes, why do you keep me in the dark, Charlie? I laugh. I think it's so funny. All right. Okay. So that's the Locke check-in. I want to talk about the others really quickly here.
Yeah. Let's talk about the others.
Okay. So, my memory, having just rewatched the whole series, is that eventually the others try to peddle this narrative of like, we were just concerned for the pregnant women in your camp and we wanted to make sure that like what was going on with them was okay. And like, you were okay, Claire, and like all this sort of stuff. And like, I don't know. I feel like the others eventually get kind of rebranded as like being correct and somewhat benign, despite the fact that they like slaughter the Dharma Initiative. But how does that square with Ethan like coming up and like just really, really, really murdering a guy? Like, do you feel like to me, it feels like they didn't know who the others were yet. And so they're like, they're scary, murdery people. And then later they're like, what if it's more complicated than that? But like, I don't know. How do you guys square?
I think it's a
narrative.
It's a little bit of that, but it's also a little bit of like the way it's recontextualized later, like when we meet Ben and Juliet and we see the crash again, is like he sends Ethan and then that other guy whose name I don't remember to the two different camps. And the idea is like for a while they're sort of on their own. So like, I wonder like how much of what Ethan is doing is part of the other strategy and how much of it is just like, Ethan's here to keep an eye or, try to help Claire's baby, but Ethan's also a little bit off, you know, like Ethan's got a dark streak.
In the later episode where we see like Claire with Ethan, like basically in that like weird little bunker clinic that they have.
Yeah.
He's almost like taken with her. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, you know, she's drugged up to the gills and he seems sort of like soppy about her. And then
real sociopath stuff.
Yeah. And then she escapes and it's definitely his fault that she escapes. So I have to wonder if Ethan's like, I'll make it right. If I have to kill fucking everyone, I'll make it right. I mean, what's great. I mean, I was talking to Sims about this. Like, Ethan is one of my favorite characters. Sims is of the mind that like they really fucked up by killing him so quickly. And I agree, even though we get, William Mapother like again and again and again over the course of the series. Like, I forgot until this rewatch that he's like Horace's son, like that we see Juliet deliver baby Ethan in the past.
Yeah. He's like the Mr. X on X-Files of this weird series. I thought you were dead. No, all right.
Oh, it's
whatever.
Ethan again. Goodwin's the name of the other guy, by the way, that you were thinking of.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Goodwin.
The guy from True Detective season 3. Anyway, yeah, I don't know. I think it's hard for me to square some of the super violent things that the others do sometimes with some of their mission statement stuff. You know?
How so? What mission statement stuff? What are the others' mission statement at this point?
At this point, there's the whole temple stuff. Like, don't they seem very like zen and cool and temple-y at the very end?
Well, yeah. The show does like later.
Jacob,
the Ben section is kidnapping people that are being put on a list by the man in black who's pretending to be Jacob in a cabin. So they're not good people at this point. Like, their motivation is to figure out. I don't know necessarily.
They think they're working for Jacob, and they think Jacob is a force for good.
Yes, but that blind faith leads them, like, especially Ben, into doing a ton of horrible things.
Sure,
and it's like,
but
that's what Juliet's problem is when she gets there, is she realizes that there is like a need for her, but like the mission statement's wrong. They are totally the type of people that will kill people coming out of the ocean. When the things crash, Ben asks for a manifest. He doesn't ask to gather survivors. Like, these aren't an altruistic people.
Well, yes. Absolutely. They're not altruistic, but I'm just like, there's a difference between altruistic and actively harmful. Like, I guess what I would say, and maybe this is too much information for people who like don't remember all of Lost, but like, I kind of, from this most recent rewatch, my sense of the others is like, it's their island. They're on a mission from God, which is Jacob, right? But they're wrong, but they think they're on a mission from Jacob. And as long as you don't as long as you don't fuck with their ways, like, they don't want you on their island. And if they can get you off their island, they would like to do that. If not, there are some uneasy truces that have happened, like with the Dharma Initiative or with like the soldiers who were there before. All usually ends badly. But like, if they just want them gone, why don't they just kill them all like they did the Dharma Initiative?
Because they don't. They have a list and Claire's on that list.
Right, but.
But if you're not on the list, you're expendable.
I will say this.
A pawn.
It doesn't make sense
game.
To me. Like, honestly, they're why not kill everyone who's not on the list and then just round up everyone on the list? Like, you know?
That does seem like a very valid way to, you would have less of a TV show, but.
Because that's what they do with the Tailies, right? Is they just, like, snatch the people on the list. The kids, Cindy, et cetera. Like, pretty, you know. In fairly
pretty
short
quickly.
Order. No, I guess it takes them 40 days, I guess, or whatever. I don't know. It's just, I think they didn't always know what they were going to do with the others, and that's fine. I just think Ethan breaking every single bone in that dude's body feels like hard for me later to be like, oh, the others are just some hippies living in the forest. Maybe I should just never think of them as hippies living in the forest.
Well, Ethan's like at the level of eye patch guy. In terms of like, he's like a henchman level.
Mikhail.
Yeah. So he's not, you know, the families. He's not the book. Well, I guess he is the book club. No, he's not the book club. And so it's like, yeah, even if first of all, I think you're completely right for thinking about this. I just think if you have to go back and retcon it, I don't see it completely out of character for like an island cult.
I have a follow up.
Occasionally break some bones.
I have a follow up cult analogy. Are you saying it's like, how at Jonestown, there were some people who were just like, or Wild Wild Country, like that there are just some people who are like, man, it was all about the cool society, man, and like building a new life with agriculture. And then there's some people like actively putting like drugs, you know, poisoning Kool-Aid or poisoning the water in, you know, the town. You know what I mean? Like there are higher ups who are in for more violence. And then there's other members of the cult that are just sort of like, peace, love, marijuana, bro.
Yeah. Or at least that's especially how, maybe not the others because they've got like a whole Richard figure and a Ben figure and like sort of a struggle as to who's leading them throughout time. But definitely when we get back to the Dharma Initiative, that's how I feel about like a lot of the Dharma henchmen is it's like they just really are dedicated to this idea and they got thrown into a jungle and things got weird to the level of, you know, like guns and nukes and stuff like that. So yeah, I think at some point, yeah, there's some people who just take it too far, but the island is a magical place that like makes people, you know, if you go to it to find a healing experience, I bet you could. And I bet you would value that healing experience more enough to like turn a blind eye to some Mikhails and some Ethans.
I love Mikhail. All right. So, we're going to talk about Walt in a hot second, unless Neil has anything else he wants to say about the others.
Well, no, I do. I agree that it's weird. It's just weird in like a meta way where it's like at this point in the show, the writer's room needs us to be very scared of the others. Like they need to, be the scariest thing. And then later in the show, it needs us to like some of them. So it like, it has to do these things to like soften them in weird ways. But it is, yeah, given his crimes, it's weird to then later be like, oh, but they were pretty chill. Kind of. Yeah,
I do wish that we had
less gotten. Juliet broke that guy's fingers. Then it's all everything's off.
I do kind of wish that we had had an, I would have loved an Ethan flashback episode. We cut, you know, we see his birth and we see him in like Juliet's flashbacks and stuff like that, but like, and in one of Ben's flashbacks as like a boy, but I would have taken a whole Ethan flashback episode. Is there a character who didn't get a flashback that you guys would have loved to have seen a flashback for?
Other than Vincent?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's where you throw the Vincent one. You don't give him a spinoff, you give him a flashback episode. So, like, the first scene of the flashback episode, you're like, what is this? Why am I in grass? Am I on the island? Okay, what character that didn't should have? That's tough, because we don't really learn... I don't feel like I learned anything fascinating about a character that isn't later looped into a flashback somehow, you know? Do we get a Pierre Widmore flashback episode?
No.
I would like that.
Yeah.
I just feel like his story comes in so many pieces from so many different other storylines that I think he could have benefited from a unifying
I love shitty, handsome, young Widmore.
Yeah.
I have a couple other candidates. Charlotte. It's weird that Charlotte doesn't get a flashback. And then Mikhail, right? How do you get that eye patch? I'd like to know.
Do we ever get a Penny flashback? We just get Desmond flashbacks with Penny in them.
She's like in the Desmond.
She could be in the Widmore episode.
Sure.
Problem solved.
All right, so we are going to... Oh, one last thing before we get to Walt, which is... there's some stuff in this episode about, like, when Jin is asking Sun if Claire's okay. And then he's like, what about the baby? And Sun gives him a weird look. I don't believe there's any of their, like, infertility pregnancy stuff in translation. Which is the episode that's upcoming. So do you think at this point the writers knew that they were going to do, like, a pregnancy fertility
yes.
storyline with them?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, it seems like something they would have built out by now.
I guess it's not until season two, right? So,
but doesn't that card go on the table really early if you're like, we have one married couple of attractive people?
Also, we're going to do weird baby pregnancy stuff on this island.
Dare you about Rose and Bernard. How dare you?
Well, we don't have them yet, yeah. So that's, I mean... They should have also had a baby. I'm pro everybody, all married couples hooking up on the island. I'm just saying. I think that
I'm pro non-married couples hooking up on the island. I think everybody should be hooking up on this stupid island. They've been there for a month.
Yes, time enough.
Fun
sex island
baths for everybody. All right.
Just don't go in the ocean.
All right. So here is Steve's email. Steve is following up on something that Dave sort of touched on in last week's episode. Special. Actually, sorry, one last thing really quickly before I get to Steve's email, which is that I think I said something about Walt manifesting the animals. Like, what's true is that we don't know the extent of Walt's powers, right? And that's what we're going to get into in this episode. But, like, someone was asking for clarification, and they were like, do you, by manifest, do you mean made appear, or do you mean, like, call to him? And I guess, like, in the case of the birds especially, I would say, like, call to him in some way. Not like he made them appear out of thin air, but, like, attracted them to him. And maybe ditto the polar bear.
That's not at all how I meant it.
Okay, how did you mean it?
He blinked it into an existence.
Great.
Like, he's able to blink himself in and out of a wet, drippy existence later on in the series.
Tall Walt. Remember?
Tall Walt.
Settled on Tall Walt, not Wet Walt.
Tall Walt.
All right, this is from Steve. I was pleased to see you touch on the magnetism theory with Walt and the birds.
Yes!
It is a weird theory that I kept my eye on during my most recent rewatch. The crux of it is that Walt has the power to bend the magnetic field in such a way that allows him to become the magnetic North Pole. Birds have an internal compass that allows them to tell direction. I have not found anything similar in polar bears, but given that they are native to the Arctic, perhaps there's something in their biology that allows them to sense the North Pole as well. But we also see a bunch of dead birds. We also see a bunch of birds dead on the ground outside Hydra Station in a Missing Pieces mobisode. Side note, you guys are going to do an episode on them, right? While Walt is in room 23. What do all these incidents have in common? They all occur when Walt is agitated, scared, or angry. He's annoyed that Susan and Brian don't pay attention to him when he reads his book. He's angry that Michael won't let him hang out with Locke anymore, and he's terrified when he's subjected to room 23. Perhaps flashes of intense emotion briefly activate this magnetic field towards him, drawing birds and bears to his location. I cannot account for the instances of astral projection. However, it should be noted he first appears to Shan right around the time he's abducted by the others. Another moment of intense emotion. This theory is admittedly a thin premise, but in fairness, the show already has a character who has a special ability concerning electromagnetism, Desmond.
Desmond! Yes! I like this email a lot. Okay, I set it up wrong because when I was like, no, he could manifest them, because that's not the theory that he's talking about. He's talking about my question last week.
Yeah.
Are Walt's powers based on electromagnetism? Sweet. I love it. Yes. I hope polar bears, there's gotta be some sort of ursine magnetic north science.
Okay. So all you, bear, or ursine,
all you ursine experts,
scientists,
ursologists. Come on, guys.
Ursinologists out there. listening, please write in and tell us if polar bears are naturally attracted to magnetic north. No, me.
Or did they just get stuck there when everything broke apart?
Me losing my marbles at the end of last week's episode when you introduced this theory was not that I disagree with the magnetic field theory. I don't, like, that's fine. I'm fine with that. It's when you take it to the conclusion that then Walt was inside the computer, which I think is one of the silliest things you, my very smart friend, has ever said.
But wait, if Walt can, if this gives him the ability to project, astral project himself, that's not limited to just showing up in the jungle.
Yeah, he could be on a computer or anywhere he wanted.
I don't know.
In the computer.
Anywhere he wanted, Joanna.
I do think, though, I agree. I think I agree more with Joanna on the, what's doing the animal thing. That's like a magnetism that he's attracting them. I don't know if I necessarily believe, and this is probably contrary to what I said last week, but just go with it. I don't know if Walt is blinking things into existence.
I think that they might be related powers, but I do like the idea that I read on the internet that I'm now adopting of electromagnetic powers, and thank you so much for that email,
Steve.
Let's track it together. Steve.
I'm fine with electromagnetism.
Well, when we get to the computer, we have a whole season of this show that's going to follow a whole season of that show,
really,
and we could dedicate a good 15 minutes of hashing it out. Whether or not Walt's on the computer. But until now, I'm going to say electromagnetic bears is my new wiki wormhole to go down this weekend.
All right.
Sweet. I think unless we have more stormy thoughts about Charlie, I don't know. No, I think we covered it all. That's all the stuff I'm interested in with Homecoming. You guys
yeah,
got
Charlie. Charlie's got a complex. He needs to protect Claire.
Charlie needs
That's
to protect
what we learned.
Claire, and he's still addicted to heroin in the past. All right, cool. Neo, where are we off to next week?
Oh, we're going to episode 16, Outlaws. Guess who? Who could possibly have
Kate.
Outlaws as their title? Oh, you know, it really should have been Kate. but it is our man Sawyer, which I guess is actually, like I said earlier, one of the harder things to pick up in this week's episode because all he does is make more jungle jokes. But yeah, we're going to be delving into the Outlaws.
Yeah, what's up with the guy who's been stealing girls' diaries for no apparent reason? Let's check in next week.
We'll go from the guy who read the diary to the guy who didn't read it, but totally could have if he wanted to.
Uh-huh. And also just, like, pack-ratted it so people will talk to him. Finally, we'll talk to him. All right. Until next week, where can people find more of your work online? Let's start this week with Joanna Robinson.
You can find me talking about the TV show Succession. Still watching podcast. You can find me writing about the end of Legion over on Vanity Fair. You can find me doing a book club on the podcast Little Gold Men. Or you can find me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This.
And Neil Miller.
We can get me over at filmschoolrejects.com. This week is 90s week. So we're doing all kinds of fun stuff around 90s movies. You can also follow me on Twitter at Rejects. I'll probably be tweeting about either Euphoria or Succession or both, depending on how this internet poll works out. And then don't forget to follow the show, of course, at Storm Podcast, where we'll have all kinds of fun stuff for you.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can follow me on Twitter at DA7E, where I tweet links to my writing and random thoughts about nonsense. You can also find me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast, wherever fine podcasts are served, where we talk about pop culture, like how this week Universal canceled the movie The Hunt because the president tweeted about it. Guys, we will see you next week on the island, and I'm urging you to not fall down.